This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Why don't you just go gay all the way? But that's not it, 'cause bi's legit. Whether you're a he or a she, we might be a perfect fit. And one more thing, I tell you what, being bi does not imply that you're a player or a slut. Sure, I like sex.
Please make him stop.
But I'm no hoe, I take things slow until I feel at ease. So if you ask me how I'm doing, I'm getting by, I'm getting by, and it's something I'd like you to demystify. It's not a phase, I'm not confused, not indecisive, I don't have the gotta choose blues. I don't care if you wear high heels or a tie, you might just catch my eye because I'm definitely bi. Intellectual to get that I'm bisexual.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
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 Bisexuality.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexuality.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
That's right. You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. I'm Ruby.
And I'm Anthony. And we're getting by.
We are getting by every day.
What a cool track.
Oh, it's just the best. So that was Getting By featuring Pete Gardner by Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I do love it. As you might be able to tell, I do play it pretty often. I just think it's a pretty good anthem for us.
It is. And if that doesn't convince you, gee, I don't know what will.
You're just lost. You're a lost cause. Speaking of lost causes, our dear listeners, if you want to, please, I take it back. Please keep listening to us. I love you. If you're listening to the show and you want to like say hi, you can message us on 0427 569 949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au. You can message us with the Joy app on iTunes, or you can find us on Facebook at Triple Bypass on Joy.
So get involved. We'd love to hear from you.
We always love to hear from you guys.
And we have our regular listeners, and we expect you to be listening tonight as well. So to get involved, we have an interesting show lined up for you today. Our sister, our family member, our bi ally is not with us tonight.
The try to the triples.
the triples. So we're sending a big cheerio out there to Christina.
Hope she's feeling better. But while she can't be here, her voice will be.
She will be, because we, Christina, interviewed someone very important to our community, someone called Nathan Despot. Christina interviewed him late last year, and he is in, he's a Christian.
He was a big part. He came from a Catholic background, I think. So we actually haven't had a chance to hear the interview yet, so we'll be responding with you guys. So, but it is talking about, the pretty dark side of the church that Australia has too, which is the ex-gay conversionish community.
That's right. And I guess, these are people who obviously people who go to the faith and believe in God and have this spirituality believe they're actually doing the right thing, but we actually know that this is not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And Nathan went through quite an experience around gay conversion therapy, and he met with Christina to tell her all about it.
So we'll be playing that for you guys. Now, of course, heads up, this probably will contain some stuff that may be quite distressing for some of you, so take care of yourselves. If you're someone, you know, you can listen to it later. We'll be putting up a podcast, so just make sure you're taking care of yourselves as well. We wouldn't want you to feel sad.
Welcome to Triple Bypass. This is Christina here, and today we have in the studio Nathan Despot. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good.
Good. Now, we've got Nathan in because we're experiencing a lot of this conversion therapy palaver out in the media lately with Mike Pence and his ridiculous statements about taking funding away from HIV and AIDS research and putting it into conversion therapy research. All this will make sense when I actually ask Nathan to speak. So I'm going to ask you to tell me your story. Tell me what has brought you to this place here now.
Multi-pronged story. I mean, I'm I guess what you'd call an ex-gay survivor. Mm-hmm. So I went through about 10 years of various forms of ex-gay. And I say ex-gay, and I use ex-gay as a noun as opposed to an adjective.
Okay.
Because people, you know, ex-gay is usually followed by the word therapy.
Mm.
But I think we've sort of moved past that. Ex-gay is really a movement, and it's not just therapy. But I guess I'll go back to the start. I mean, you know, when you start a story, I was born at a very young age. but I wasn't raised in an evangelical Christian environment. I sort of entered that world when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd had a bad experience with a relationship with a guy, and you know, I was around friends at university who were full-on Pentecostal evangelical Christians.
Wow.
And I was raised Catholic, and you know, I was drawn to, I guess, the black and white nature of evangelical Christianity. I was also very loving and accepting environment on many levels. There was a warm, safe community at the church that I ended up going to for 11 years.
Wow, it's a commitment.
Yeah, it's a commitment. So one of the first things that I experienced was that warmth and acceptance. And there was a strong culture in the evangelical movement at the time, and I guess there still is in some ways, but around this concept of healing and brokenness, this idea of instead of talking about mental health, instead of referring people to proper mental health services like what churches should have done and actually should still be doing but often aren't, there was this understanding that you were, I guess in a way, pop psychology was practiced quite widely through the evangelical church back then.
Okay.
And ex-gay was part of that. It was recovering from homosexuality.
Like it's an addiction of some sort.
Like it was an addiction of some sort, absolutely. You know, even if you hadn't acted out, then it was still considered to be an addiction of your thinking.
Oh my God! So thought police.
Yeah, that sort of stuff.
Oh my
goodness!
Yeah,
and that's something that runs all the way through the ex-gay movement.
Mm.
This idea that when a woman longs for a woman, she's longing for the nurture of the mother that she never had a close relationship with. And,
okay. Sorry, and, forgive my mirth.
No, it's laughable if it wasn't so damaging and destructive.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But then on the other hand, you've got, you know, for men, longing for the nurture of and the strength of the father that they never properly connected with. You know, and so there's a lot of that pop psychology.
Yeah, it's very Freudian in a lot of ways, isn't it?
It is. It is very Freudian, very much so. It really is. The group I co-lead now, Brave, we brought out a speaker from the States called Kathy Baldock recently in one of her the show that I produce along with Dean Beck here, Inside Ex-Gay. One of the interviews we did was with Kathy, and she's written a book that goes through the history of sort of linking the way that Freudian approach to psychology and the American flavor of psychoanalysis and also the European and British background of psychoanalysis and how that led to the ex-gay movement that exists now.
Right.
So you're quite right, and you know, those very facile Freudian concepts are alive and well in the ex-gay movement. Back to my story, though. My experience was poor mental health, depression, anxiety, had never properly been diagnosed, wasn't raised in an environment that was au fait with talking about those things. So basically, for me, it was just a matter of, you know, in hindsight, I realized I was experiencing poor mental health. But back then, it was I was broken. And there was a warm, nourishing community. My experience of gay culture to that point had been not very good.
Right.
So I just sort of, you know, I was an 18 year old and I just sort of swallowed it all.
Goodness,
and that was,
so
that was
young.
2000. Yeah, so that was things, we hadn't quite gone over the hump yet in Australia in terms of wide sort of mainstream acceptance of LGBTIQ community. Certainly wouldn't, I don't think you would have had a standing ovation at the Arias
for an equality message.
Yeah. We were getting there though.
Yeah.
I like to think of the ex-gay movement and well, the ex-gay ideology as a little bit like time travel. Mm-hmm. You know, no one's built a time machine yet. Maybe they won't. Maybe it's not possible. But certainly if you take a person who has one view of their childhood and their life and then you put them through some sort of program or expose them to a type of thinking that says, actually, what happened to you at childhood wasn't good. What happened to you in your childhood was actually a bit of abuse and some damage and you weren't aware of it because how are you to know? You have no basis for comparison. But actually, because of the things that happened to you growing up, that's why you ended up same-sex attracted.
So they're thinking that childhood abuse of any form is synonymous with identifying as homosexual or other than straight.
It goes beyond abuse. It goes to things like, oh, you know, things look rosy in your family, but actually you didn't bond properly to the parent of the same sex or you had a dominating mother, all those kinds of cliches. It's like time travel, though, because what happens is, effectively, for myself and many, many other ex-gay survivors, there was this process of, I guess, training us to convince ourselves that things didn't go quite the way they were meant to when we were growing up. And therefore, actually, so it's changing your story. It's screwing with your narrative of your life, which is actually very damaging. It actually ricochets through your whole sense of yourself, not just yourself, but also your story.
Yeah.
It's quite deep. So, you know, I could talk heaps and heaps about the journey of evangelicalism, but I won't. You know, I was involved in various kinds of ministries and all the rest of it. It's quite full-on little evangelical Christian. Wasn't raised in it, so there were always some fundamentalist types of thinking that I would see in my friends in church and think, it's a little bit cray-cray.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you weren't raised in it, what drew you to it? Other than you mentioned about it being warm and comforting and accepting, but did you want a relationship with God or was it more?
Well, it was always about, it was always about God.
Okay.
And it was always about my faith. It was always about this idea of, you know, Michael Jackson, heal the world, make it a better place. You mean the entire human race, that kind of stuff.
Pretty much
that's what it was about.
Right.
It took me probably 4 or 5 years for it to really hit me that actually most of what I was seeing around me in the evangelical movement was about maintaining the tribe, growing the numbers, having other people think the way that they thought. I guess I was asked a lot of questions. I got myself in trouble a lot because I'd always ask questions and point out inconsistencies.
I did the same thing in Christian club and got shot down.
And you get shot down, absolutely. You know, I went to Bible college in between other things I was doing.
Wow.
Did a grad dip sort of part-time in theology and was engaged in various ministries.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, had some interesting experiences with I guess the underside of ex-gay. So, you know, there were a few times where there were guys that I became very close to who were straight, in inverted commas.
Right.
And they took it upon themselves to be people that would help me become straight. So they would sort of be the strong, straight male role model to help teach me how to have proper relationships with men. Of course, some of them were actually predatory or people that were confused about their own sexuality, and that's why they had a little crosshairs on me.
Goodness me.
Yeah, this is very common. Very common in the ex-gay sort of world. But I guess, you know, it was around 2010 that I really just kicked it all in and walked away from it. But around that time, there'd been a shift in our culture, and even my parents, my family, other people around me were saying to me, please stop doing this to yourself.
So your family was saying, stop being not gay.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, not as directly and bluntly as that, but that was a message that came through many parts of my family as well as a lot of my friends.
That's excellent.
It was very good.
Yeah.
I went to a conservative Bible college. Some of the senior theological lecturers would actually come to me quietly behind the scenes saying, stop doing this to yourself.
Really?
I'm like, but you're meant to be the ones who were for this. And like, no, we don't agree. And someone even sat down with me with theology textbooks and theological writings with the Bible, going through translations of the Greek and Hebrew words, saying this is why this, you know, it's been translated wrong. Actually,
yeah.
It's okay to be this way. And I was already working that out for myself. But I guess at that point I was beginning to realize that you could be LGBTIQ and a very healthy, fulfilled person.
Mm.
So that was well and truly proved to me. And I guess the reason I'm going through these realizations that I had with you now and talking through some of these mini realizations is that, you know, it is a process of the light bulbs going off, going on for people that have been on a similar journey to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's often a process of, it's not one big revelation of, oh, actually it's okay to be gay. I can accept myself.
Yeah.
It's a combination of influences. It's learning to respect yourself, realizing that you're not broken. It's seeing all the other people that have been through ex-gay that have claimed to have been healed, and then later you know, they're in a gay bar or something, or they get caught with their pants down, or they just come out of it and move on, and then they get demonized and treated horribly by the church, and you think, well, that's not very
Christian
behavior.
Yeah.
But then it's also seeing the desperate clinging to patriarchy in the church as well.
Yep.
I would say, though, that because of those early roots, you know, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, where the ex-gay ideology was really implanting itself in my mind through the different activities, conferences, therapy sessions I was going to, because it had so deeply lodged itself in my life story and in my view of myself and my childhood and all that kind of stuff, I think that's why it took so long to break out of it.
Well, you're listening to Triple Bypass. That's Nathan Despot speaking with our own Christina about conversion, not really therapy, but the conversion almost lifestyle that is happening in Australia.
That's right. And if you're finding tonight's show and content distressing, feel free to call Lifeline on 131114 or call Switchboard on 1800 184 527 and get some support.
Take care of yourselves, guys. It's pretty heavy stuff. We'll be right back after this message and a song. We're going to be listening to Hilltop Hoods featuring Montaigne and Tom Thumb on 1955. We'll be right back. This is Triple Bypass on Joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. That was 1955 featuring Montaigne and Tom Thumb by Hilltop Hoods.
It was a great song.
It was.
Another relevant song to tonight's topic.
It was a bit. By the way, I'm Ruby.
And I'm Anthony.
And we're here tonight playing an interview with our dear Christina, who unfortunately couldn't make it to the studio tonight, but she recently interviewed Nathan Despot, who was part of the ex-gay group, which is he's been talking about. It's a pretty fascinating subject. And during the break on that song, we actually got a message in from someone who said that there's actually one of those conversion camps over near them in Toowoomba. It's called the Department of Ministries Toowoomba, Overcoming Homosexuality. That's happening right now in the Toowoomba region,
yes,
up in Queensland.
In 2017.
Apparently, one of their friends, their cousin ended up going and said that there was a lot of Bible bashing and then a lot of gay sex in the evenings.
Makes sense. They are gay.
And they're all together in one small space, you fools.
Right.
We'll be going back to that interview. Now, of course, it is covering some pretty distressing material, so make sure you look after yourselves.
Yep, and those numbers again for Lifeline, 131114, and Switchboard is 1800 184 527.
Nathan Despot is with us on Triple Bypass.
So when you came into it, had you come out before you had entered into the church?
I'd come out very quickly and then jumped right
and then
back
jumped
in.
Then jumped right back in again.
Yeah.
So you came to wanting to be not gay after you joined with the church. Am I getting that correctly? Or did you join the church because you wanted to?
No. It was really because of my faith and because I...
The two just couldn't reconcile, your faith and your sexuality just couldn't reconcile.
Yeah, it was probably a few months into being involved in the evangelical movement that I thought, oh, well, which is more important to me, my spirituality, my sexuality? And the answer was my spirituality.
Right.
But then I, you know, obviously as I got a bit older, I realised actually they shouldn't, they're kind of flip sides of the same coin and all that sort of stuff. You know, we could talk for hours about that, but that's not the point of, you know, what I'm talking about now. Yeah, I guess what this led to afterwards is realising that I'd actually come out relatively unscathed, which I know is pretty, I was pretty damaged, but compared to some of the other friends I know who had been through various other X-Gay type events or programs or conferences or whatever with me,
yeah,
I was actually kind of okay.
Right.
Yet I'd been through a horrendous time.
Yeah.
I'd been through a really horrendous time.
So can you go through some of those programs or therapies that they did, if you're comfortable with that, if you could take us through some of them?
Yep. So there's different types of there's different building blocks and components, you know, involved in the X-Gay movement. So there's the media aspects, so multimedia. There's online courses that people can get involved with, usually from the States. In a moment I'll talk about whether these are still going now.
Okay.
I think a lot of people will be surprised at how much of this is actually still happening and still available to people.
Even here in Australia.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, but if it's online, then it can be anywhere.
Well, yeah.
Radio programs. So Focus on the Family, which is a large American movement, has a very large Australian presence, and you can listen to their programs late at night or during the day on a few other Christian radio stations in Victoria. You can, which is not explicitly ex-gay or homophobic, but it contains that sort of patriarchic worldview.
Right.
But then there are other Focus on the Family resources online when you go to the website that are the ex-gay homophobic sort of stuff. But I think they've been careful from a PR point of view to not play those things too openly anymore on air.
Yeah.
So there's that multimedia side and media and radio broadcast. There's the conference scene. So there's ex-gay conferences that occur around the place. In Victoria, not so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The last major group, Living Waters, shut down a few years ago. They were based in New South Wales. But there are actually conferences that I'm aware of that have occurred even in Victoria since then, but very much on the down low,
yeah,
and with speakers flown out from abroad to Australia. Then there are small groups run by churches, very sort of clandestine, and they're still happening now. They absolutely are. I'm aware of quite a few.
Goodness me.
Quite a few, maybe just two or three, but they're there and they're available.
That's, yeah, well, it's two or three is a lot, really.
a lot of at-risk people.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's the one-on-one group counselling, and we don't really know. We can't really know what's happening in that space.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who come to the group that I co-lead, Brave, there are still people every month. There would be a new person, even if they don't come to one of our sessions that we have.
Mm.
There's someone that will contact me or another of the leaders by email. Freedom to Be has recently finished up their sort of formal operations at the moment. Freedom to Be is a fantastic group that has really saved my life in many ways.
Yeah.
That's been run around Australia for many years, started by Anthony Venn Brown and then led in more recent years by Michelle Kolev. And that was a tremendous group for people from religious backgrounds, LGBTIQ. Mm. And even there as well, people would come regularly. There were people continually coming out of the woodwork, people that have come out of, you know, two or three decade-long marriages to people of the opposite sex that they were coerced into.
Wow.
And there's children there. People still emerging from that background even now in 2016.
So is that part of, like, of the conversion therapy is to actually coerce the subject into a marriage that they don't particularly want with a member of the opposite sex? Is that common practice or is
Look,
that...
Look, I can't really say how common that is. I'm not... I mean, I don't think it's part of anyone's methodology, if you can use that term.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't think that's, but definitely there are people out there that have been in that environment,
right,
in mixed orientation.
Yeah,
and sometimes that term mixed orientation is used by the ex-gay movement to sort of, in the States, there is a speaker at the moment who has tried to, you know, put out material. Encouraging people to stay in mixed orientation marriages and to just ride it out, which is quite a horrible thought, really.
Ride it out towards what end, though, you know? So in terms of the content of these different methodologies, shall we say, is it using Bible verses to try and convince the person that, you know, were you ever told that you were abhorrent or wrong or was it more like a love the sinner, hate the sin kind of...
It was
situation.
Much more love the sinner, hate the sin.
Right, okay.
I think that's one of the misconceptions. I mean, there's been some of the groups that practiced ex-gay in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, they were the gracious voice in the church,
mm-hmm.
if it was, you know, sinners going to hell,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, if that was the voice, and the ex-gay voice was actually, you're not an abomination, you're just broken, and God loves you and wants to heal you. That was the progressive voice,
which is so much more insidious in a lot of ways.
It is insidious, but I know many of these people that led these groups years ago. Mm. Some of them are still holding to those beliefs. Many of them have moved on.
Mm.
Whether we like it or not, that was the voice of grace. That was the gracious voice. Yeah. Now, thoroughly out of date, thoroughly just awful, right? But yeah, back then, in that context, it was daring and radical,
right,
to be in a fundamentalist church and to say that.
I can imagine within a fundamentalist church, yes, that would be towing the line a little bit. You know, yeah.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It's so my father's an Anglican priest.
Right.
And an out gay Anglican priest, yeah, calls himself a progressive Christian. So I'm not a Christian now, but I was brought up within a progressive Christian construct.
Yeah.
Having a gay father meant that I was exposed to that radical idea of accepting people for who they are.
Shock horror.
I know, right?
Yeah. See, those ideas, though, of you know, tolerance, tolerance is a bad word, but acceptance, those words are sort of imbued with a real wishy-washy, illegitimate sort of meaning in evangelical circles. There's no legitimacy behind the concept of acceptance. It's like...
Why is that, do you think?
Because acceptance for an evangelical is this idea of acquiescing,
right,
to ungodly, worldly standards.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for me, that was definitely part of that theology that I was developing in my 20s, but now it's well and truly behind me. I mean, the Michael Jackson song before, you know, heal the world, make it a better place.
Yeah.
It's funny now. I think, you know, that actually is the gospel, actually. It is actually that, you know, you think of the Jewish term tikkun olam, which is the... lack of a better term, you know, healing the world or repairing of the world, if you like, of the cosmos, of the universe. That's sort of what my faith is about now.
Mm.
But it is interesting. There are, you know, many people who I meet who are ex-gay survivors who have recently walked away from the ex-gay world. And many of them are still in that place where they very much hold on to the evangelical worldview, but they just want that. They want their church to change in that one area of accepting them as being LGBTIQ. And what I say to those people is, you know, if church was so very wrong about that one aspect of your worldview, could it be that it was wrong about many, many others as well? It's scary because it provides that sense of comfort, I think, being in that theological framework. Everything's very black and white. So, you know, I would say as well that a lot of people who come from an ex-gay background are quite stunted in many ways. There's, you know...
Well, if you've not been allowed to actually have freedom of expression, whether that be expressing your sexuality or your spirituality or however that is kept under wraps and you know, repressed, then yes, you are going to be very emotionally and psychologically stunted. I can completely understand why that would happen.
Yeah. I know those terms seem very sort of simplistic, but, you know, from the point of view of someone who engages with so many ex-gay survivors or people who are LGBTIQ from evangelical backgrounds, it does come across as being as being that way.
Yeah. Now, for all the bisexual listeners out there who are wondering what this has to do with bisexuality, Anthony and Ruby, who are not with me at the moment but will be next show, we have often talked about that if we had the choice whether we would continue to be queer, bisexual, pansexual, however, or whether we would choose to be straight, and if there was a pill you could take, that kind of thing. Have you come across any bisexual or ex-bisexuals who have survived this process and come out the other side? Can you tell me any stories about them, about our little B section of the rainbow?
Yeah, I'm quite mindful of the, I won't say invisibility, I'd say the sort of willful ignoring of the B in our community.
Yeah.
I'm gay. I hear a lot of gay people tell me, you know, well, you know, everyone's a little bit. And I'm like, no, not me.
No, not everyone's me. Not a little bit.
No, no, and I find it's those kinds of little things that roll off the tongue that are quite, sorry to use a terrible term, they're quite problematic, you know, because it is not true. Mm. And for many people, those little comments are very harmful. I need to, you know, disclose that I'm very aware that bisexuality is for many people in the LGBTI community, and particularly in all the conversation in the ex-gay world, whatever, in the evangelical church, bisexual people are a phenomenon, not living, breathing humans. And so I'm very mindful of talking about a group of people, you know.
I guess why I ask is that a common misconception about us is that we can choose and that, you know, that we have an element of straight privilege because we're also attracted to opposite gendered or other gendered individuals. And it's the one thing that, that our show talks about is the this is something that we were born as. This is something that we cannot – it does not switch off if we're with a member of the opposite sex any more than it does when we're with a member of the same sex.
Absolutely.
And the idea that bisexuality is somehow a get-out-of-jail-free card, particularly if you're dealing with spirituality or religion, when you have a particular religion, you have these urges, but it's like, oh, that's okay. I have a safe space because I'm bisexual. So all I got to do is just be with someone of the opposite gender and just pretend that I don't have that same sex attractedness. That that can be an extremely difficult place to be, as I'm sure you can imagine.
So now I guess, you know, as I look back on the ex-gay world, there's a few... it's just funny, a lot of people don't realise this, and I haven't really heard this very much in the conversation around ex-gay, but there are people I know who were sort of pin-ups, who were the people that were, we've been healed of homosexuality. And as I've got to know them, I've gone, actually, you're bi. You're bi. You were bi and you still are bi. And but a lot of, you know, in some churches, what gets said, what's part of the conversation is if you are attracted to someone of the same sex, you are gay.
Yeah.
What's missing is if you are someone who is attracted pretty much solely to people of the same sex, then you're gay, which we sort of go, oh, yeah, that's funny. But actually, for many people, that's been their definition. There are some of the most famous pin-ups of the ex-gay movement who have been ex-gay preachers who have sent their resources around the world have been people that have actually been trans or bi, but not cisgendered and not gay, but have presented themselves as being a cisgendered gay person who became a cisgendered straight person. And actually there was a whole lot of other stuff going on. And that's been quite – so that's messed with the story. Yeah. Then on top of that, there are people who actually were genuinely gay and claimed to have become straight but never did, and it was just something they said because they wanted the approval and to be the success story, and they wanted it so badly that they said that. So the bi voice has been really lost in that confusion. Then you've got, you know, the fact that a lot of people, as I did, and I'm a bit ashamed of it now as I learn about the plight of the bi community, where I was one of those people that was, you know, came out as bi first before saying I was gay because I felt that would be easier. Yeah, I know I was young and that was just me trying to do something to cope, but I think it's been helpful for my bi friends for me to acknowledge that and say, actually, I'm not happy about the fact that I said that. That was just me trying to survive. So, yeah, you know, I do know some bi people who come to Brave. There are other bi ex-gay survivors that I know. And it's been sort of interesting, you know, realizing that I have to listen to their stories and I have to hear because there is so much of my journey that is just not transferable to their journey. So I guess I'm still in that place of listening. But I do know that that bi people have very much been sort of collateral damage in the whole ex-gay movement and their voices haven't been heard properly.
Joy sponsor. Hey, we're the Veronicas and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
That's right. This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Triple Bypass with Ruby.
And Anthony.
And Christina, who is here with us in recorded form.
That's right. She's interviewing Nathan Despot. They're talking about ex-gay culture, I guess.
Yeah, so basically people who, as they've kind of come to grips with their sexuality and they've been members of the church, have decided to join communities that are entirely built around suppressing and demonising their queer urges. And a nice little touch at the end about, you know, the willful ignoring of bi people within that group and how that's manifested. And Christina was pointing out this idea of if we take a pill to stop being queer, hell no, never.
God, no. I want a pill to enhance that being queer.
Bye, till the day I die. We're going to play a song next, and we've got some more of the interview with Nathan. So, again, it's pretty heavy stuff, so please take care of yourself, listeners. We've been reading out the Lifeline, but we'll give them to you again.
That's Lifeline on 131114 and Switchboard 1800 184527.
If you're enjoying the show, let us know. Listen in, message us on 0427 569 949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. Message us on Facebook at Triple Bypass on Joy or use the app available on iTunes. You're on Triple Bypass. This is Joy coming up. You're on Joy. This is Triple Bypass coming up. I Know a Place by Muna and then more with Nathan Despot.
Hi, this is Tina Arena. I love listening to Melbourne's most uplifting music mix on Joy 94.9.
In terms of the coming out as bi before coming out as gay, I mean, look, things are changing now that more and more bisexual or bisexuality is actually being seen as a legitimate, separate sexual identity. I know a lot of people that have had that same experience, and I mean, I'm married to a woman who used to be completely anti-bisexual, did not believe it existed, was not like... So when she met me, she was kind of like, I'm going to have to eat my hat now, aren't I? And I'm like, well, yeah. Yeah, you do. But, yeah, I think visibility is the key here. And within this movement, you're already repressed. And then if you have this sexuality, which is even less understandable than a monosexual attraction, you can be even more repressed. And it's just this layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of not being able to fully express who you are. So what can Brave do? What does your group do for these people in order to give them that freedom?
I think we're still in that listening phase. And
not just with bisexuals, but with all ex-gays, whether it be, you know.
Okay, yeah. So one of the things that I guess we focused on is because a lot of people who come to Brave are people that still want to have a faith that more or less looks like an evangelical sort of expression of faith in some way. So there's a sense of a living faith and a living God. They're not people that have put their faith in a real living, tangible God away. They're not people from an evangelical Christian background. They are Christians who are LGBTIQ. And it's about figuring out what does life look like for us now, you know.
Even though, you know, in the New Testament, Jesus said nothing about homosexuality. Not once.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, that's the place we've come from is, okay, that's, you know, dealt with that. Now it's about what does it look like to be Christians who believe in a real living God and still have a robust sexual identity, gender identity. In terms of the people, though, that are bi or trans, you know, lately we've been really focusing on just saying we want to hear more about your story, we want to help you tell your story. It's been really great having researchers and quite a few journalists from some of the major press agencies come to us or get in contact and help some of our group members to tell their stories. In fact, more than half of the group have now told their stories to a researcher or a journalist and had those included in advocacy projects and made, I would say, quite a lot of change, actually. And yeah. I'm very proud of them. Quite amazing people. A lot of it is about referral. You know, we meet once a month and there's limited time and limited speakers that can come in and talk to us. But I've definitely got a passion for seeing some of these people that come from more cloistered evangelical communities engage more with the real world, like career and education and learning and dealing with what part of my faith was actually just superstition.
Yeah, right.
Because a lot of evangelicalism is based on fear of God and fear of punishment. There's a lot of superstition that happens. And there's a lot of just conversation. Some people are at a point where they don't really want to call themselves Christian anymore. Some people don't know if they even believe in a God. All of us are very aware of what it sounds like to tell people, I believe in God, I'm a Christian. We're all fully aware of what that means in our secular society. We're not ignorant about that at all. And we know that's a big call. It's also hard also in the LGBTI community who feel so hurt by church. I think many of us, we can say, well, we've been hurt quite a lot as well.
We can trump you on that one.
I don't know about Trump, bad word. Well. it's interesting. In terms of another thing I was thinking about before with the bi community as well is that I think a lot of them, there are a lot of men that I met in the church and I look back and I go, I think there were people here who were closeted as gay or bi, heaps of men, so many men who were just totally invisible. I know this because there were many guys who I think I was friends with years ago in the church who had kind of tried to tell me that they were.
Oh, really?
And there are also quite a few who are married, you know, and I feel quite sad for some of those guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't go and I'm not going to go back to all of them and open a conversation with them.
Yeah, you can't save everyone, hey?
Yeah, I mean, we have to, each of us as well, you know, Brave, we talk about having to look after ourselves. Mm. Well-being is really important. There are a lot of people who want to go back and change their pastor's mind.
Yeah.
And my focus is always saying, is it safe?
Yeah.
What will that do to your well-being? You know, will a conversation change the pastor's mind? Will one coffee change their mind? Mm. What I've noticed is that most of the religious leaders that have decided to affirm LGBTIQ people and change their theology and change their faith and even sometimes go back to their churches and announce it and then either get kicked out or it's very interesting conversations, is that it's pop culture that actually changes their mind a lot of the time.
Really?
It's family members, it's friends, it's their own reading and learning. Sometimes, you know, going back to the church that kicked you out because you're LGBTIQ and having a conversation may actually be kind of redundant because, you know, I don't usually see that that is what changes people's minds.
Is there an ex-gay movement that is not connected to a church or to a religion, or do you have any members of Brave or anyone that you know of any accounts of people who have tried to quash their sexuality not through a religion?
I'm not personally aware of anyone in my circles at the moment who's come from that background, but I do know that up to the mid and late 70s, there was a movement, not a movement, I guess it was a dying form of practice in the world of psychoanalysis and psychotherapy, of applying some of those Freudian ideas, you know, possibly even electroshock and that kind of stuff, you know, to people. You know, we look at like Alan Turing, for example, and, you know, that horrendous story.
Yeah, my God.
And we see that was, you know, a type of ex-gay, what was reparative therapy that was wrought by secular bodies or by government even, or as part of practice. Something that Kathy Baldock, who I talked about before, this amazing researcher, writer and activist from the States, talks about is the effect of Anita Bryant, who was a big evangelical influence in the late 70s in the United, well, mid and late 70s in the United States. And how sort of in the late 70s, as, you know, feminism was, well, actually, I think in the late 70s, feminism was beginning to be really squashed, I guess, by the conservative right in America. There was a real kickback against feminism.
Yeah.
But also there
against
was
first wave feminism. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. But this sort of more secular sort of reparative therapy, there's a bit of crossover that was dying off as, you know, DSM-3 removed homosexuality from that edition onwards. It was removed. I forget what the specific term was, if it was homosexual neurosis or some really weird term, but it was removed.
I remember when masturbation was called, I don't remember, but it was called onanism. Onanism?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. In my sexual history research, it was onan. I'm going to onan tonight.
But all these things were embedded in very much in secular culture, and they were dying out. And it was in that very end of the 70s and early 80s that the American flavor of ex-gay suddenly exploded. But something that Anthony Van Brown, who I talked about before, talks about a lot is how, you know, in the early to mid 70s, he was going through religious forms of ex-gay type of therapy and groups and what have you that were before the founding of some of the biggest American ex-gay groups that came later. So there's a bit of crossover, you know, there was this sort of secular type of ex-gay, for lack of a better term, that was dying out in the 70s. But then also in the 70s, there was this birthing of this more hardline evangelical conservative ex-gay sort of movement. And that, I think a lot of people think, and I kind of agree that it is that sort of tailing off now, tapering off and ending. Right. But like I said, there are still individuals coming forward every month who have been through this.
Hi, this is Sam Smith and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. I'm Anthony.
And I'm Ruby. And we have been listening to Christina speaking with Nathan Despot, who is, I would like to say, a survivor of 10 years of ex-gay culture.
God.
Because, yeah, I have to admit, what I listened, that's rocked my world a little bit, I have to admit, to know that that's going on here, to hear from, you know, a listener that this is actually still happening, in fact, right close to her in Toowoomba in Queensland. You know, this is not just a United States issue, as I think a lot of us kind of still think of it as an evangelical, American thing. No, this is happening at home, but it looks like there are people who can have come out the other side and are doing everything they can to make things better for those who've come through it and have come out the other side and are feeling a little shattered, as I imagine you would.
Yeah. And the courage it takes to disentangle yourself, not just from the community that you've sort of devoted yourself to, but also finding the inner strength to be okay and to know that gay and or bi is fine.
Or anything other than heterosexual is totally fine. And so I think hopefully you guys have enjoyed listening to that. It has been pretty heavy, but it got a little more theoretical near the end. We have to finish out right there. We are going to go on and what I think is a very appropriate song from our favourite Australian bisexual, or my favourite, Sia.
She's singing about us.
She's singing about us, that's right. The Greatest with Kendrick Lamar. We'll be back next week, 10 o'clock on Tuesday. This has been Triple Bypass.
Thanks for listening.
You're on Joy.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.